From Studio J, 10 stories above K Street, this is the Education Gadfly Show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who was also in Selma, Alabama over the weekend, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, man, it was cold on that bridge.
I was, yeah. Did what role were you playing down there in Selma?
Oh, I was just hanging out. I was, you know, showing for the cause. I was ticked, though. You know, the Clinton and Obama stealing all of my thunder. I went down. I thought we were going to get some podcast points.
I know.
I thought we'd get some media frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the white guy way back on the right side, kind of middle of the pack.
Yeah,
did any of the cameras focus on me?
No, I couldn't see you in the picture. I mean, I saw that nice picture with Obama on one side and Hillary on the other, but where were you, Rick?
You know, and if Bill hadn't gone, I would have been the white guy.
Yeah.
They could have stuck me in the frame.
Yeah.
But didn't happen.
That's too bad. You know, Rick, Rick is on the phone with us here today. He's not in the office, and he's not going to the conservative prom tonight, otherwise known as the American Enterprise Institute annual dinner.
These are the perils of being on the road, baby.
I know. And, Rick, I'm the one going to this dinner instead.
You're going. We're a team. We're a duo.
Is that what it is? I'm sitting here in a tuxedo, all ready to go.
You're a good-looking man in a tux. You guys should put a shot on the web of you in a tux, because you wear it well.
Yeah. Okay. We'll think about that.
Although I don't want you to be like inundated with a lot of spam porn by people trying to, you know, get life-size photos of you in a tux.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I guess that could be a real problem. But I have to say, Rick, I'm not that looking forward to this whole conservative confab, because I can just see it now. There's going to be all kinds of chanting for free Libby, free Scooter. You know, pardon him, pardon him.
Well, you can chant something about NCLB or teacher quality.
That's a good idea.
Very exciting.
So, Rick, I understand you are working on your annual piece about the American Education Research Association conference that's coming up.
That's true.
Yeah?
That's true. In fact, you know what we'll do is we can tease listeners with just one of the most promising papers that they can catch if they go to AERA in Chicago.
Okay. Tell us about it.
Let's see. Well, you know, and it's hard to pick just one. But the session that, you know, our listeners might want to make sure they catch is, quote, depending on how you read it, the transcontextualization of pedagogies of everyday practice across urban communities. In particular, this panel features what promises to be a stellar paper, Identity, Positioning, Knowledge, and Rhetoric in the Pedagogical Practices of Elderly African-American Bridge Players.
Yes. Finally, the ed schools are doing some research on what matters most. Oh, God. You know, clearly this is where the fact that I did not go to graduate school and get a PhD shows, because I have no idea what that paper could possibly mean or add to society. Well, readers, if you have something, some crazy paper you'd like to tell us about, shoot us a note at letters@edexcellence.net. We do love to hear from our listeners. Okay, Rick, that is a good tease, but let's get going. Let's start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. All right. Then we have an interview this week with Kathy Carroll, who is going to tell us about her new book, A Guide to Field Trips. This is going to be a real stemwinder, Rick. And finally, our in-house weirdo, Liam, who is back feeling better again over the flu. Liam will impart some education news of the weird this week. It's not about scrotums like last time. It's about vaginas.
Does it involve Britney Spears?
I do not know that. We'll have to find out. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Kobe is filling in for Jen this week, who's out on assignment in Ohio. So, Kobe, let's get started.
Okie doke. I don't have the bell like Jen usually does, so if you guys go over the 90 seconds, I'll just make a improvised noise.
Thanks for the advance warning.
Okay.
What happened to the bell?
I don't know.
Jen took the bell with her to Ohio.
Topic one. David Brooks recently wrote a column in which he lamented that U.S. presidential candidates are still talking about the same old stuff when it comes to education, namely fixing schools. Brooks wants someone to talk about the parents and neighborhoods and lifestyles that are really holding our students back. Good idea, Mike?
Well, Kobe, sure, it's a good idea to a point. And in his column, David Brooks makes the argument that, of course, there's a lot of important things that happen between 0 and 5, and we need to pay attention to those things. And he points to some programs he finds promising that help stressed mothers be better mothers than they otherwise would have been, which helps the kids. all that's fine and good. It's also nice to have Senator Obama out there talking about parents needing to turn off the television and make sure the kids do homework, and you know, daddies stepping up and being daddies. All that's great. But it's only a half step removed, I think, from telling schools basically, look, it's not your fault that these kids can't learn. You know, until we fix all this societal stuff, we can't expect kids to all reach high levels of achievement. And that, Rick and Kobe, is the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Ooh, you lay it out there, Bo.
So what do you think, Rick? I mean, am I off base here, or is this just David Brooks going soft?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always this, right, all this stuff in context. On the one hand, you can say, look, you know, the whole Bush administration spelling fanaticism about you know, test-based accountability in schools creates this notion that there are no factors outside the schoolhouse door. And if Brooks is saying Republicans need to remember there are a bunch of other things that count, yeah, good for him. On the other hand, it sure sounds like he's been hanging out with a lot of flower children.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is the problem. And, I mean, you know, furthermore, how do we keep the rhetoric from turning back to this point where we say, well, look, we've got to fix poverty before we can hold schools accountable?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's right. I mean, the bottom line is, of course, you need to remember that parents and families and communities matter. Yeah. But to say that you shouldn't be talking about schools at the same time strikes me as bizarre.
All right. There you go. Were you down there in Selma? Did you listen to Hillary's speech or to Obama's speech?
You know what? There's actually this phenomenal ribs joint I went. They've got stellar sweet tea. I discovered it when I was hitching cross country back in like 84, uh-huh. And I had to sleep at the Salvation Army down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's got, oh, killer sweet tea.
That was a good decision. That was a good decision. Okay. Topic number two, Kobe.
Okay. Looks like the nanny state wants to end Pizza Hut's Book It program, which rewards voracious young readers with free pizza, because it, quote, epitomizes everything that's wrong with corporate-sponsored programs in school, end quote. Rick, should we tell Pizza Hut to take its reading program and shove it?
You know, this really points out one of these tough decisions we got to make when it comes to ed policy. Do we want thinner kids who are going to read even less than they do today? Or do we want fat, supersized kids who at least have extrinsic, artificial incentives to read? Given how little our kids read and how stupid so many of them are, I'm ready to take jumbo-sized readers at any day.
See, you know, so a lot of people have a problem with using food as a reward. I find it works around the office. You know, I tell Liam and Kobe, you know, for each recommended reading that you write for the gadfly, you know, you get another extra slice of pizza.
That's why they didn't pork enough.
That's right. Now, the problem is they turn out a lot of quantity, but not necessarily quality at that point. So you've got to be careful about the incentives. Well, you know, this is partly about, you know, people thinking it's bad to have these behavioral programs where you reward with food. And then there's this, the whole obesity question as well, which we've talked about a lot on this show. I think you're right, Rick. We got to set some priorities here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, in fact, around the office, several of our younger staff members, including Liam and Kobe, we're both outraged about this issue because they remember being a part of this Book It program. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't remember it from when I was a kid.
That's right.
They might have had Shakey's, but I think Shakey's is now out of business.
Liam, what did you enjoy so much about the Book It program?
You know, the new worlds that were opened up to me. Every time.
Liam read short. It's actually an accountability and incentives problem. Liam was reading short books,
right?
Because you were just getting, you know, a medium cheese, whatever you read. But if, for instance, reading Moby Dick or like Brothers Karamazov, you get a
ding,
you know,
ding, 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 ding,
with everything. Kids will be reading, you know, much more challenging work.
Okay, I think that was just Kobe's very lame buzzer. I mean, what? It sounded like the San Francisco trolley or something.
Kobe, you
I've got this
go
rich baritone. I can't
Come
just.
On,
switch gears and make a nice tinkly little bell. I'm sorry.
Hey, give Kobe $5 and have him go buy a bell.
All right. We'll get Kobe needs a bell. All right, Kobe. Your last chance here. One last topic.
Okay, topic three. Rod Page has a new book out in which he discusses how unions stymie promising educational reforms at every step of the way. Mike, is the NEA a terrorist organization?
Oh, now that's a loaded question, Kobe. I can't believe you asked me that. I wouldn't say they're a terrorist organization. And in fact, in his new book, former Secretary of Education Rod Page tells the story of using that phrase and in effect apologizes, admits that that was a poor choice of words, and then goes on to bash teacher unions for 150 pages. He tells a funny story about when this whole thing happened, when he called the NEA a terrorist organization and all the uproar ensued. He got a call from Secretary of State Colin Powell, and they were friends and former fellow cabinet members, and Powell said, "All right, Page, let me make you a deal. You stick to education and I'll stick to the terrorists." And Page replied, you know, "All right, that sounds good, but I got a deal for you. You know, how about I deal with bin Laden and you deal with the NEA?" And Powell said, "No deal. No way." That was a good little story in there. Anyways.
Mike, sounds a little to me like you're sucking up to our buddy there, Rod. Does he have any relationship with the Fordham Foundation?
Well, in fact, he is a trustee of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. You're right.
So you're not going to offer us a seething, critical look at Page's work, are
No,
you?
That's right. And if you read Checker's review of his book in this week's Gadfly, you'll find it's even more positive and glowing. But hey, it is a good book, and it's worth you purchasing it at Amazon.com. All right, but the larger question here is about the unions. Good case in point, Rick, this week, New York State Teachers Unions, after getting billions of dollars thrown their way by the new Democratic governor, they are now going after him in television ads because he dares to support charter schools. Right.
I mean, what are they, suckers? I mean, they're not on hand and bended knee taking little morsels. By God, they're fighting the good fight, and they're showing that no matter how much you support them or compromise, they retain the right to try to bite your head off.
That's right. So if you're a politician, especially a Democratic politician, why do you even try to please them?
Well, because, I mean, if they're going to do this to you after you, do everything you can to help them out, imagine what they do to you if you don't try to help them out.
See, I read it the other way. I just say, forget about them. Just forget about them. Forget about them. Kobe, isn't it time for this to be over? Where's the bell?
I just didn't want to be embarrassed again by making a silly bell sound that didn't sound anything like a real bell.
Kobe.
I figured you guys knew your limits after doing this for so many weeks. No.
Well, that is your first mistake. If there's anything we don't know, it's our limits, especially Rick. All right. Well, listeners, thankfully, not thanks to Kobe. That is it for Pardon the Gadfly. Nice comments, Rick. Now we turn to this week's interview again with Kathy Carroll telling us about field trips. Let's take a listen. Today we've got Kathy Carroll on the show with us. She is the author of A Guide to Great Field Trips. Kathy, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Well, thank you.
So, Kathy, I understand that you are a professor at Cambridge. Now, I don't detect an English accent there.
This is Cambridge College in Massachusetts.
Aha!
Which has many satellites in other parts of the country. I go particularly down to Virginia, like Chesapeake, Virginia.
Okay.
And California, there's class in Georgia. So it's definitely American.
There we go. Okay. Well, Kathy, you've written a book called A Guide to Great Field Trips. We're going to talk about field trips today. Why don't we get started by just talking about the big picture? You know, there's some people complain that field trips are getting squeezed out of the curriculum because of concerns about raising achievement in the core subjects. What would you say to schools? Why is it important for kids to still take field trips?
I would say that field trips, right now in this world that we live in, kids are getting into more and more of a two-dimensional kind of experience of life, where they see life through TV sets and computers and Game Boys. But what they really need in order to be able to make use of the knowledge that they learn and to transfer it is that they need to be able to get out into the real world.
All right, so let's give some examples. What are some field trips that can achieve those goals? Because I got to tell you, I remember being on some field trips myself that I don't think serve much of an educational purpose. So how do you make those field trips great?
Yeah, I'd like to give an example. Suppose you take the kids to Gettysburg, to the battlefield of Gettysburg. Now, if you take the time to let the kids understand what is war and what happened in that battle and how did that affect the rest, how does that affect the Civil War itself and the United States today, then you're going to have a very different experience than if you take the kids and all they see is a green field and a gift shop. What it means is that in order for, you know, those field trips that you've taken, if the teachers had the wit and the knowledge to say what are our learning goals here, and how will I know if the students have achieved those goals? How can you have alignment between the goals and their achievements?
is there something that has to happen then before the field trip, let's say, to Gettysburg, to make sure that they do walk away with a really strong learning experience?
Right. You need to think through. The teacher, I have in my book something called Domain Matrix, which is a systematized way for a teacher to think through. Okay, what do the students need to learn?
Now, Kathy, isn't it fair to say, though, that, you know, some places around the country are blessed to have lots of great field trip opportunities, say, around the Washington, D.C. area, but there's probably some states out there that are, frankly, just kind of boring.
Boring is in the eye of the beholder. If a teacher has the knowledge behind her, a teacher can go outside into the playground and they can have a wonderful field trip. They can learn, get the whole history of the planet right there in that playground, studying the rocks, looking at the plants. Why do these, what's happening with the sun? How are the changes in the sun related to the movement of the earth, for instance?
Interesting. So maybe schools where they are cutting off recess could just redefine recess as field trips. This is interesting.
Yeah, well, my wish would be that the kids could get time to actually play freely, because that's just as important. Definitely, you can have the kids, they can go down to the boiler room and see how is the energy in our school being used, and how does it get from one place to another. See, you can take, for example, you can take a building. The kids go outside and they see a building. Maybe it's the school building. How does the architecture of that building relate to the time in which it was built?
Well, I have to say, though, Kathy, if I were a student and I was told that I was going on a field trip and we went to go see the boiler room, I'd be pretty disappointed.
Well, I don't think you'd be disappointed if on another day you went to someplace else. But if you were in your classroom and instead of having to stay inside those four walls all the time, you were able to use other parts of the school, sometimes like maybe learning about careers, like talking to the people in the office and talking to the police person outside. And what I'm saying is that you can make wonderful field trips happen.
Kathy, that is about all the time that we have, but thank you. That's a different type of field trip than I had thought about when we came into this interview. Boiler rooms and the office in the school and the school architecture and all kinds of other opportunities.
My book actually talks about even going to other countries. It goes the whole gamut. It has over 200 different kinds of field trips that kids can take from the minute to the expansive.
From the boiler room to Bombay. Very nice.
Exactly.
Okay, Kathy. Kathy Carroll, again, an author of A Guide to Great Field Trips from Cambridge. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Rick, do you have any particularly fond field trip memories?
You know, not really so much. I remember getting lost in Mexico City when I was a kid, but I don't think that was a field trip.
Are you sure that wasn't a hallucination?
Pretty sure. I think my mom had taken us. We'd gone down to visit my aunt and my uncle who were shooting commercials and dealing some drugs down there. And I think my mom got lost me in some 8-story mall, and it was quite traumatic, if I recall. I think I was like 5.
Yeah, so it was a hallucination. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we used to go on some great field trips when I grew up in St. Louis, and we would go to Springfield, Illinois, which was a couple hours away, and we would see the boyhood, the home of Abraham Lincoln.
Dude, you are so all American.
And I really liked that.
That's beautiful.
That was a great trip. Yeah. While you were off smoking drugs in Mexico. Great, Rick.
No, I was like 5. Although, did you see that video of those, I guess those guys who were giving their like 4-year-old nephew weed or something on CNN?
No.
Yeah, apparently they're going to bring charges on these guys.
Well, they should.
David Brooks would be appalled. This is not what he has in mind.
Rick, anybody should be appalled.
Well, I'm certainly appalled, but I'm just saying David Brooks is special.
Okay. All right. Well, it is now time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird, as if we haven't had enough weird stuff already, with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
Hi, Mike. 3 girls were suspended from John Jay High School in New York after promising administrators that they wouldn't use the word vagina while performing part of the play The Vagina Monologues, and then they used the word anyway. Junior Megan Reback, one of the suspended trio, said, quote, "It just doesn't make any sense for an administration to expect me not to talk about my body. It's mine," unquote. Be that as it may, Principal Rich Laprine defended the suspensions because he said that there were younger people in the audience who could have been adversely affected by the word.
but Junior Ellen Stahl disagrees. Quote, "The message of this piece, if we took out the word vagina, would be contradicting itself. And we shouldn't have to censor it. And we're not going to censor our own bodies. And we're still going to be strong, independent women in the school." Unquote. Eve Ensler, the play's author, placed a phone call to the suspended girls and thanked them for being, quote, "vagina warriors," unquote.
Rick, have you ever been a penis warrior?
I knew.
Wow. I don't even know where you go with that one. Oh, my goodness. You know what does occur to me, which it would be a nice parallel between News of the Weird and the interview this week, is that both Liam and the field trip lady have two first names.
Okay. That was a good segue away from a sensitive topic. Wow.
We don't really have FCC issues, but there's somebody who, if you say some of these words too many times in a 30-second window, yeah, I think come and threaten to do you bodily harm.
That's probably true. I mean, first of all, I would think that by the time everybody gets into high school, they've had some kind of sex education, and they've come across this clinical term, right? So I don't understand. And furthermore, I mean, if they're going to do this, they should just say they can't do the play at all, right? I mean, what did the poster say the name of the play was?
I don't know if they had any posters.
I mean, did it say the monologues? I mean,
that's true. It's
a good point.
There's a question of false advertising.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a nice point.
Wow. Liam, you did not disappoint. Nicely done. And you look like you're feeling better now.
I am. Thanks.
That's good. All right. Well, everyone, that's all the time we have for this week. We think we have probably offended most people and probably have the FCC coming after us as we speak. Thanks for joining us. And don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.